So the title is Phase Transitions for Some Epidemic Models with Moving Particles. So as a motivation, let me talk about spatial stochastic epidemic models. So spatial stochastic epidemic models for the spread of infections have been around for a very long time, since 1974. Probably all of you know about the contact process. So just to remind you, so as to contrast it with the models that I'll be talking about today. In its simplest version, it takes place on the sites of the lattice, ZD, and each site has a single particle, which can be categorized as infected or as healthy. They can be more classes than just two, but the type of problems I'll be talking about today have just two classes. And in this basic setting, healthy individuals become infected at a rate that is proportional to the number of infected particles in their nearest neighborhood. And infected individuals recover at a constant rate. So this would be, if this were Z2, then you have green points that are healthy, red points that are infected. And for example, this red point here, well, let's find a green one. This one would be getting infected at rate proportional to D, so this one will get infected faster than, say, this one who won't get infected at all. Now, for the contact process, there are many extensions. They allow for competition of species. They allow for mutations, general grafts, diffusions, random environments. There's an enormous amount of work done in contact process, but there's one restriction all the time, and that is there is only one particle per site. So more recently, interest has been into modeling, one particle per site, and that's the main thing, that they do not account for movement of individuals. So more recently, there has been attention put into allowing movement into these models. On the one hand, there are models that use only cellular automata, and on the other, there are models based on random walks. So the particular model that interests me now was introduced by Kestern and Sidorovicius, and it looks like this. You have the same lattice, ZD, but this time, sites can have more than one particle. The original distribution is according to a Poisson random variable independent on each site. And first you locate all your healthy particles, and then you just place one infected particle at the origin. And you let all these particles move independently at the same rate. And when you have a B particle that jumps into an A particle, the particle is infected. Or when you have an A particle that jumps into a B particle, the A particle gets infected. We require the idea of a jump because if you don't require that infections take place after jumps, after recuperation, then they would immediately get sick if you were in the same site. So that allows for sites to have combinations of A and B particles. And B particles recuperate and become A particles independently at some rate lambda. So to compare the picture with what we had before, if this is your original configuration, these are the kinds of possible transitions that can take place. On the one hand, you could get one of these to jump there and nothing happens. If you get one of these green ones here, then it becomes infected, or there nothing happens, or there's a recuperation right there, so because it was red, now they're all green. So there's a lot of variety of things that could go on. And now think of the same situation, but now let's introduce disorder. And I do have some questions. I didn't bring these questions up before because I was going to talk about this now, so you would hear it twice. But here's the disorder that we bring in. So we have the lattice, and now we're going to flip points throughout the lattice to decide whether they're going to be recuperation sites. I'm calling them traps, and here's my first question. I need a better word than traps, because I can't think of and nobody has come up with a smarter and catchy word for recuperation sites. What they are is that if you have I've also thought about them as hospitals or something like that, so that if you have your lattice and they're jumping around and they're infected, there are certain sites so that if it's infected and it jumps there, it becomes recuperated. So there are sites that do not allow for infected particles to be in there. So I'm talking about quench disorder because I am setting the traps at time zero and they stay like that forever. Now, from the process that Keston and Sidorovicius have constructed, then we can construct this one. So they did a lot of work constructing the previous model, but taking that work is actually easy then to modify it and construct this one. So what they've done is that there is this process with no traps constructed on a suitable subset of this space. So what is the space where this takes place? Well, this is space, this is type, and these are all the possible particles. So they give you the location and type of all particles at all times, and you are assured that you have a countable number of particles so that you can actually just number them as Z plus. And that subset is such that it assures that there's a finite number of B particles at all times, that there is a finite number of particles at all points, at all times, and that the process is Markov. With that, then we can come in and build the other one very easily. Once the other one is constructed, you can use the same initial conditions, the same recuperation times, the same path, and simply say that if you call P the probability of finding a recuperation time, I'm still calling them traps because that word is short and catchy, but if you find, if P is your probability of trap, then basically the model that you had before, anything that had type A at time S in that model, you leave time of type A. And then those that are B in those models, there are only finitely many of them because that's one way in which that one was constructed. And there are only going to be finitely many changes. And so you can actually change types in finitely many spots in order to create the model and extend it to where it found traps. So you just have to analyze any particle that jumped into a trap and any interaction between those traps, between those particles. Sorry. So here are two monotonicity properties. So if you have the model with and the model with disorder and the model without disorder, and if they start at the same initial conditions, then any particle that is found in one is found in the other, and basically there are more particles that are B type in the model without traps. And another monotonicity property is that if you have two models with traps, and you couple them so that one has more traps than the other, so you're putting that the probability is higher in one than in the other, then there's that monotonicity again. One has more traps, the one with less traps has more B particles than the other one. Now, what type of things interest us about these models? Well, they're phase transitions. We're interested in phase transitions of these things. So what type of phase transition goes on here? So we need some definition. We say that an infection survives globally if there are B particles at all times with positive probability. We say that the infection survives locally if there are B particles at the origin at arbitrarily large times. And we say that the infection dies out if there's some random time at which there are no particles, B particles left with probability 1. So we're really going to be talking about these two. And so Keston and Sidorovicius' theorem says if we consider the original process, then there exists a critical recuperation rate such that the infection survives below for a recuperation rate below that value, and the infection dials out above that. So we basically have a behavior like this. This is called supercritical, and this is called subcritical, even though it's this is above and this is below, because here they die out, and here it survives. So it's borrowing the language from systems that behave like this. And then what you can say about the other model is that if you fix this probability, and in particular, this probability has to be smaller than 1 minus PC. Now, who's PC? That's the critical probability that we were talking about this morning, the critical probability where there is percolation on the lattice. Why is that requirement there? Because if there is no percolation on the lattice, so if the particles are not allowed to extend all over the lattice, then they're going to be in a finite set, and they're bound to die. So you need them to be able to extend. So if there is a possibility of extending to the complete lattice, then there is a phase transition. And moreover, for different probabilities, for probabilities that are bigger than the other one, then there is monotonicity in the critical values as well. So I'll just mention the extension for large lambda is really easy given the two lemmas that I presented. Basically, since the model without traps has more B particles, whenever that model dies, the other one dies as well. So the fact that that one has a phase transition means that this one has to have a phase transition as well, and it has to be at a lower critical value. The survival for a small lambda, then they have a very nice proof using directed percolation, and what I have been able to modify their proof is to show that for small p, this works out. What I still haven't been able to prove is that, in fact, the threshold is exactly the critical value, so that this should work for all values below the critical percolation. But there are still things that we want to talk about in comparing these models and try and understand how their critical behavior changes by introducing disorder. So in order to do that, you first have to understand critical values of the original one, and then numerical work comes in. So these are some methods that, these are the ways that we estimated critical values for these. Basically, we're basing two ideas. First, consider three quantities, the number of infected particles, the survival probability, and the mean squared distance of the infection. So for any value that you pick of lambda, if these quantities grow, that means that it cannot be subcritical. It cannot die if it's exploding. These quantities decay, it cannot be supercritical because it cannot explode. And here's once you have done this, then you have a range from which you think then the critical value will be, where to look in. You have separated the two regimes, and then you have possible values that are subcritical. So that means they're going to absorb. You can actually count the time until absorption. So if you take the expected time until absorption and you believe that it behaves like this, then you can estimate the critical value by non-linear regression. So these, I should acknowledge the work of a student of mine at Trent University who has been working on these simulations with me. So here I have two of the pictures. So here is the number of B particles, so you can see the behavior very clearly. For these lambdas, there's growth. For these, there's decay. This one is somewhere in the middle, so that value will be close to criticality. It's still decaying, but it gives us the bound for the critical value at 1.16. Now, in this particular case, we have fixed the rate of jump. There are many parameters, so you have to fix the rate of jump. We've taken it to jump at rate 1. We have fixed the number of original number of particles, so that's one particle on average per site. And we're just doing it right now in two dimensions. The picture here is the spread of the infection, and again, you can see these are growing, these are decaying, the values go around the same place, and so the critical value is around 116. So we have separated that above 116, then there's growth, below 116, there's decay, and you can in fact check that those values where there is not absorption are indeed super critical, because whether you start with an all-infected lattice or whether you start with a single particle, the ratio of A particles converges very nicely, and it converges to the same thing. So the nonlinear regression that I told you about, it was now run these simulations for different recovery rates. Now they're all then above the 115. You have something like that for expected time until absorption, and you run your nonlinear regression, and more or less that's the value where you would find it. Now this, just to mention, this depends very heavily on the number of initial particles. So obviously the more particles you put, then the more chance it has to survive. So when you change your number of initial particles, then the same thing, doing exactly the same thing for all of them, you can see the critical value is decaying. You have less particles, then the rate at which there is criticality will go down. Now, what you do is consider the model with traps. And here I'm going to show you what we've got. So doing the same thing with every trap probability. Then this is the no trap, so that's the value that we had before, about 1.15, and then doing exactly the same procedure for all of them, and you can see very clearly that there is that decay. And that's where the simulations, after that everybody absorbs, which coincides with what we were thinking, that has to be the critical value. So this is in two dimensions, which is about 0.5927. So after that, everybody absorbs. But when you actually plot the time for absorption, or when you compare your particles, you see they never grow. They always decay. So you know that everybody absorbs. But in fact, time for absorption is longer and longer and longer. So what we think is happening is that there is in fact something like this going on, so that somewhere in there, sure, they're dying, but they are taking an infinite expected time until absorption. So the behavior will be different somewhere in that little piece right there. But the simulations even doing it numerically, very close to here, they simply don't even get to absorb. You know that they will absorb because all of the quantities are going down, but you don't let the computer run that much. They simply take too long. So things that I hope that to do with this, and to get your ideas, to get you excited in these models that I find very exciting, is on the one hand, I need to finish proving that there's that infinite expected time for absorption. Now, there are questions about power law behavior, because even finding those critical values, we never assumed that there was any kind of power law behavior. So is there power law behavior? And when adding disorder, does that power law behavior change? Is it relaxed, as physicists said? Now, obviously, the next thing to do is then let your traps depend on time and see what happens. And then we're actually thinking of models that have different explanations in terms of an epidemic. On the one hand, giving them some kind of immunity, give particles after they recover, give them some kind of immunity, and keeping track of mutations is awful. And the idea is give them an immunity that goes down according to some decaying function. That would, in a way, take into account the idea that the particles that are infecting you are mutating, so you're no longer immune against them, so that there is immunity going down with that. That's the system of with mutations. And then the idea of intermediate hosts, in which you have A particles and you have B particles, and you have mosquitoes, for example, jumping around at different rates, but they have to be the ones that change the infection from B to A. They cannot go from B to A, but they have to go through intermediate hosts to pass on. And that is what I had to share with you today. So, no, you prefer to call them horses. Thinking of these, I actually have a picture. Right, but there is a difference when, so they're only in finite. Because they can't expand, they're only in a finite piece. But if there is an infected piece there, and it doesn't recuperate fast, then it gives it time to get all kinds of particles inside as well. So it constantly gets fed by outside particles. So it's a very interesting situation, because now you're in finite piece. You know it has to absorb, but the fact that it's interacting with all these bombardment of particles takes the expected time until it absorbs to infinity. I think that's what happened. Then the simulations support that. Even we're so far from the critical point here, but this is, we're talking, where's my picture? So here we're going down to 0.41, something like this, right? 0.4073. And all, even as far as 0.7, all of these are absorbing, and so you can imagine that these are, this is really just the lattice itself, the recuperation rate that is doing this. But as these go down, this explodes, and close to here, they simply do not absorb, but they're supposed to, because they are in a finite piece. So they are going to absorb, and the pictures do support these functions. The probability of absorption, the number of B particles, they all decay. They just decay. They keep cusping further and further away. So they are going to absorb, but they are taking an infinite amount of time. So I do believe that there is that transition of types of dying fast and then dying, but taking an enormous amount of time to die. So that's the thing that I was asking is, I don't know if you know of more than that about these power law behaviors, and if then we could ask whether disorder changed that. So I don't even know where to start understanding whether this could have power law behavior.
Thank you.